This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Are you the survivor, or are you dealing with family violence? Chances are that you or someone close to you would be saying yes. 74% of all Texans have experienced some form of domestic violence or know someone who has. In San Antonio, the rate of family violence is one of the highest in the state, in the nation. Last year, 34,000 calls were made to the San Antonio Police Department concerning family violence. Many of those calls involved a gun, a knife, sexual assault. What help is there for survivors of family violence or people who want to become survivors of family violence? They're in the middle of it right now. How is breaking the silence the first step in breaking the cycle and then breaking free from family violence? We want to hear from you. This is a community conversation. This has happened to you. Tell us your story. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. And you can tweet us at TPR Source. We're joined this hour by Linda Canizales. She is with the Family Violence Prevention Services here in San Antonio. Also with us is San Antonio Police Department Officer Betty Cardona, who specializes in family violence. Julia Rainey Rodriguez is the co-founder and chair of the Bexar County Domestic Violence Task Force and is an attorney for family violence victims and their children. And also with us is Amy Zunica. She is a survivor of domestic violence. And again, our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. So we do have new numbers that are showing us how this is getting worse. The problem is not getting better. It's getting much, much worse. And Julia Rainey Rodriguez, can you talk about what we're learning now about the state of family violence in Texas?
Absolutely. It seems to be a worsening crisis. This past year in 2016, 146 women were killed in 55 Texas counties. 24 additional family members and friends were killed with those women, and 183 children lost a parent. These numbers are collected by the Texas Council on Family Violence and released annually, and they have been increasingly going up every year. This past year in Bexar County in 2016, we had 11 women killed in family violence situations. That's a very high number given our population.
So 146 women were killed by a male intimate partner in 55 Texas counties. And that is, how big of an increase is that? How does that look on, if we chart this out over time?
I'd have to look. I think it's about a 15% increase from the year before. I need to look exactly, but it's definitely a significant increase. We're going in the wrong direction in Texas and nationally.
Looking at these numbers a little more closely, the relationship status is also being teased out. And what can we learn from looking at that?
Well, it looks like, I'll talk a little bit about the age first. About 82% of the victims are between 20 and 39. The youngest victim in Texas this past year in 2016 was 15, and the oldest was 92. So family violence does not discriminate. It reaches children, teenagers, and the elderly. Though the majority were between 20 and 39. Most were current wives or girlfriends, and then either ex-wives or separated wives were murdered.
I'm looking at the data. It says 35% were wife, another 32% girlfriend, 18% ex-girlfriend, 12% separated wife, 3% an ex-wife. So a current wife is the most likely individual in this grouping to be murdered by a male partner, by their husband, typically. That is startling information. Let me ask you about that, Linda Canizales. What do you make of that?
What do I make of,
of these breakdowns of, the fact that we have an increase in the number of women being killed in Texas by a male partner, 146 last year, and also that a wife is 35% of those numbers.
Absolutely. It's disheartening, and it's very unfortunate. You know, at our shelter, we have between 183 women and children living at our shelter. And you're absolutely right. The ages are very much present there at our shelter. They're very, very young with, 2, 3, five children, and you know they are being abused and perpetrated by their husbands, and it's very, very sad to see. But we are just very, very fortunate here in Bexar County to have the services that we offer, and some of the resources. We do a lot of really great work, but it requires a tremendous amount of resources. But it is very disheartening, and it's very, very sad. And that's why we all need to work together as a community. And October being Domestic Violence Awareness Month, it's a great opportunity for us to come together, victims, advocates, survivors, to say no more to family violence. And I think that we're standing our ground and trying to, boot out domestic violence.
Julia Rainey Rodriguez over at the Bexar County Domestic Violence Task Force. Again, looking at this data, we're seeing that 68% of the perpetrators used a firearm to murder their female partner. So guns are part of the equation.
Guns are definitely part of the equation. They make the situation much more dangerous. I actually read a statistic this morning that said American women are 16 times more likely to be killed with a gun than women in other high-income countries. So the presence of a gun is a problem, it's a multi-layered problem. Because often victims of family violence don't want to stay, and there are many reasons why they do stay and why they don't leave, and we can talk about those later. But one of them is safety, and sometimes people feel that they're safer in their home where they can monitor the violence as opposed to leaving and wondering if the perpetrator is going to be around the corner, if he's going to be chasing her or stalking her at work. But if she's at home, she's with a gun. If she's away from him, he has a gun and she knows it. And I think that's a fundamental problem in our society with families.
77% of the perpetrators killed their partner in a home.
With a gun.
So
not all of those with a gun, but yes.
So the issue I'm wondering is because we are awash in guns, that when we have these eruptions of family violence, that they can reach for a gun. I mean, before it was the physical alteration, but it didn't end in death. But because now there are so many guns, that this is where they reach for the gun, and it's a terrible tragedy.
It is. There are some potential solutions for that. Victims can request a protective order from the abuser, and if a protective order is ordered, he is not supposed to have guns. And so the collection of those guns after the issuance of a protective order is a really important piece for safety for victims and their children.
And being able to acquire a protective order, so is that something that is hard to attain, Linda Canizales?
We do offer legal services there to our families when they come into the shelter, along with counseling, case management. One of the main things that we do is refer them to the legal advocate to review their rights. And at that point, if they want to pursue legal services, they're able to talk to an attorney so they can do that. So we do have the resources in our residential program, in our non-residential program as well, for victims to pursue that.
And that is Linda Canizales with the Family Violence Prevention Services. We have their contact information on our website if you want to follow up because you are finding yourself in one of these terrible situations. We're going to continue the conversation. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. As we talk about family violence here in Bexar County, we're going to hear a personal story when we come back from a survivor of domestic violence. We'll also hear about what it's like out on the streets from an officer with the San Antonio Police Department. The source continues after this break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about family violence here in Texas, here in Bexar County, in our local homes. You know, we frequently focus on the physical abuse and the family violence, but it's not just the physical abuse. There is this emotional abuse that goes much deeper and lasts so much longer. There's the feeling of betrayal. There's some shame that's involved by the victims, by the survivors, which hopefully we could figure out a way to break them out of that. You feel helpless, angry, the shattered dreams, the wrecked future, all stolen from you. It's something that you had so many hopes for, this family and this relationship, and now because of an outbreak of violence, you're locked in another type of situation and you don't know how to get out. You feel lost and afraid. Well, there are people here in San Antonio who want to help you, and you can call in right now with your story and they will be able to tell you, direct you to where you can get some help. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And with us right now is Amy Zunica. And Amy is a survivor of domestic violence. And I really want to thank you, Amy, for coming today and helping us understand what it's like to be in that situation. So can you talk about what you went through?
Hi, you're welcome. I like to call what happened to me was 3 days of hell. And I say that because that was the moment I realized I needed to leave or my sons were going to bury me if I didn't do something then. For those 3 days, I was locked up. He locked me in the closet. He beat me. He dragged me. He raped me. He pointed a gun at me. And what really set it off for me was the fact that he was going to come after my son, our son. And I knew then that I couldn't let that happen because he was only 13 years old. And I waited till he fell asleep. He was drunk, of course. I waited till he fell asleep. I went into my son's room and had him grab a duffel bag of just what we had, and we left. But as soon as he woke up, the phone calls started coming saying if I didn't go back, he was going to kill himself, or when he finds us, he was going to hurt me and that I wouldn't live to see another day. But I knew that if I did go back, it was just going to get worse because I suffered for 18 to 20 years of abuse, verbally, mentally, physically. It didn't matter what I did. Everything was always wrong. But I went forward and I left and I never turned back. I went to the battered women's shelter because I would hear it over and over on the radio in commercials. But I just didn't know how to go there because the lies that they tell you, you actually believe every single word they tell you, that you're worthless. Nobody's going to want you. You deserved it. You're no better than anybody else. No one's going to believe you. If you call the cops, I'm just going to come right back and get you. So it was either, I didn't know what to do. I didn't tell any of my family because I was ashamed. I felt guilty. I felt bad. I didn't know how to tell my parents that the man I married was the same man that was beating me, that was supposed to protect me and my kids. But yet he continually beat me day after day. And I went to work every single day because I knew at least at work for those 8 to 10 hours, I was safe. I didn't have to face him. All I had to worry was about making it for those 8 hours until I got home. And again, once I went to the battered women's shelter, they were steadfast into calling the police, making the police report, helping me realize that it wasn't me, that it wasn't my fault, that I didn't have a problem. He did. Years of counseling for me and my sons to try to get us help, to try to get me through it. Because even till this day, I can go somewhere, I can sit down. If I hear someone arguing or yelling, I panic and right away I want to leave. It never goes away. Someone once said, well, that was so many years ago, aren't you over it? You never get over it. It stays embedded in your mind. You can forget and hope that the next day is better, but it never leaves you. And you depend on the counseling, you depend on going to your pastor to help you, to understand. You're there for your children so that they realize that they don't have to be like their father. They don't have to be abusive towards their girlfriend or their wives.
Thank you, Amy Zunica, for telling us your story. I'm going to give you a break now, and I'm going to turn to Linda Canizales over at Family Violence Prevention Services. And how many Mother Amy's are out there right now?
Oh, thousands. Thousands of Amy's are out there. And Amy, thank you so much for sharing your story and empowering women. And you're not only you're not a victim, you're a survivor, and you're thriving now beautifully. And I think that by you telling your story, you're giving others hope and empowering them to come out and tell their story as well. And letting them know that there is a different way of life, and to live free from abuse, it doesn't have to be that way, and that there are resources that can help them, and just whenever they're ready, we're here to support them.
Officer Betty Cardona, San Antonio Police Department, we often hear that when a police officer makes a domestic violence call, that's often the most tricky call that they can go on because it's a volatile situation and things can spin out of control quickly. How are officers trained in order to handle a situation? You were called to maybe a situation like Amy's family, and what do y'all face?
Well, we're trained to be compassionate with the victims and to listen to what they have to say, and also recognize that their safety is the most important thing for us. So we're trained with the different resources that are available within the community so that those resources can be offered to the victims. Many times they're afraid to make the first move. And so the officers there is a threat assessment that first responders are completing, and they are asked several questions regarding past history, and it's to make the victim aware that there's a lot of red flags that they may not recognize. The most dangerous time for a victim is when they make the decision that they want to leave.
When Amy was talking about her partner was telling her, don't call the police. I'll just come back. You know, they're not going to be able to do anything. And they're going to take my side anyway, because it's my word against your word. And they're going to believe me, not you. What's the reality of that?
The most important thing is reporting. Because once an officer goes out there, we understand there's two sides to the story. But when you see a victim that is upset and there's physical injury and there's prior calls that they've called for assistance, then we'll look back at that to see what's going on.
So you encourage people to call the police?
That's the most important thing.
What about neighbors? I mean, I hear my next-door neighbor, they're knocking each other around. Should I call the police?
Yes, because we go and we will follow up with those neighbors.
So that goes on the incident report or whatever?
It'll go on the offense report. If they don't want to leave information, they can call and say, I hear them yelling all the time. I've seen this going on. We'll go out there and investigate, and if there's some validity to the call, then we'll follow up on it. If not, it's documented that a disturbance call has been made to that location.
And that builds the paper trail.
Exactly.
All right. Let me get a caller in on the conversation. We do want to hear from the community on this important topic. 614-8980 is the number to call, like Wayne. And Wayne, thank you so much for calling in. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think this is an important topic. I want to take a little bit of issue with your officer there who says the most important thing to do is to call the police. I'm going to take it from a little different perspective, not from physical abuse, but from sexual abuse perspective. And I've had to deal with this situation as a religious leader here in San Antonio. And I've had this several times. Let's say that a man has been abusing his child sexually, and he wants to stop. He realizes this is terrible, and I need to stop. What happens if he then reports himself and says, I need some help? If he comes to me as a church leader, I have no protection. If he admits to me that he is doing something, I cannot help him because I immediately I have to report that. I have to turn around and report it to the police. he can't go to a psychological counselor because they are obligated by law to report it. Once they report it, it goes to CPS, and it goes into a backlog of files, and CPS will take 6, 12, up to 18 months to act on that. In the meantime, that man who has said, I need help, I need to stop this, is sitting there waiting and has no one to talk to about it because CPS is so backlogged that they can't get to it.
Okay, Wayne, thank you for the call. You bring up a lot of complex issues. First of all, I'm glad you brought up child and the sexual abuse of a child. And that is something that is wrapped up into this mess that frequently happens in these homes. So let me turn to Julia Rainey Rodriguez with Bexar County Domestic Violence Task Force and talk about where the concern for the safety of the children comes in.
Well, I would say safety of the children is a primary concern. It's a primary concern for everybody who works with family violence victims. It's also a primary concern often for the adult victim of family violence, and a lot of times the nuances about the safety of the children are pretty complicated. With many of my cases, I primarily do protective orders, divorces, and custody cases, and with many of my cases, often a victim is initially afraid to leave, and she's staying in a situation because she believes she can protect her children more if she is constantly around them when the perpetrator is around them, as opposed to if she left and he got custody or he got some type of visitation where she wouldn't be around to protect them. So protecting children is a very complicated issue. Just one other complicated and important issue, and there are many ways to do that. And I think one of the other important things is that courts really need to hold perpetrators and offenders accountable. I think there's a sense that, you know, parents should, and rightfully so, that parents should each enjoy relationships with their children. But when those parents have been violent towards the other parent or towards the children or abuse the other parent or the children, protections need to be in place for those children and for the other parent. In terms of the caller's comment about a perpetrator wanting some assistance, I mean, it's important to stop the cycle that everybody gets assistance. But I think the primary thing to look at is the victims and making sure that they are protected first. And the first thing may need to be an arrest so that they can get a protective order, so that orders can be in place so the perpetrator cannot go around the children, and so that he's held accountable. And after that, then working on some assistance. But I think it's really important to stay focused on the victims in these situations.
And really quickly, over at the Violence Prevention Services, Linda Canizales, there is help out there for women who want to leave a family to bring their children with them, right? They can go leave as a unit.
Correct, yes. And so the majority of the clients that we serve are the women who come with their children. And always we have more children than we have adults. You know, 2/3 of the population living at our shelter are children. And we do have a very, very wonderful group of advocates that work specifically with the kids on play therapy, doing activities with them, recreational activities, because they are survivors, very much just like the adults. And it's very, very important that we intervene and stop the cycle with them.
All right, we're going to continue our conversation here on The Source this noon hour. We're talking about Bexar County is one of the top Texas counties for the highest number of domestic violence deaths, and what leads to that death, and how can we recognize it these situations before they get to that point. Our number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Call in, tell us your story. Other people will definitely be healed from hearing your story. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Family violence is on the rise in San Antonio. Over the last 2 years, violent crime has shot up 27.6% in SA, according to FBI statistics. And over half of that rise is due to family violence. This horrible trend is not slowing down. It's getting worse. And we're seeing it in the number of women who have been killed in Texas, 146 women killed by a male intimate partner in 55 counties in 2016. If you don't have to be married to be a victim of family violence, you could also be in a boyfriend, girlfriend relationship, any kind of ongoing relationship. Qualifies, and there are certain protections and services that are out there if you are in this relationship, in this problem. But first thing you got to do is you got to speak up. And we're letting you know about services that are available here in Bexar County to help all the individuals out there that might be just like you. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980 and tell us your story and how other people can learn from what you're going through. So I want to ask you, Julia Rainey Rodriguez over at the Bexar County Domestic Violence Task Force, are there warning signs that people can pick up on that that you're in a relationship that may end up eventually in a death?
I think there definitely are. I think it's easier for an outsider to see those warning signs. I think most of the clients that I work with, most of the survivors talk about in retrospect, they can look back at those warning signs. But some of the primary ones are kind of control. I say this a lot, but obviously if you went out on a first date with somebody and they punched you, you would not go on a second date and that would be the end of it. So this is a cycle that kind of gradually increases as time goes on. And often some of the worst violence doesn't occur until a victim is invested. Either she's married or they've had children together, where it's not easy to just turn around and walk away like it would be on a first date. So I think some of the primary signs are control and isolation. A lot of times the first thing that an abuser does is try to make sure that the victim does not have anyone that she can turn to when he eventually abuses her. So slowly, and this can seem like a really nice thing, he might say things like, you know what, your mom isn't really nice to you. We probably should quit going over there for dinner because she's mean to you. And you know, your best friend, I think she's, you know, cheating on her husband. She's not a good person. And kind of slowly by slowly, each person that might have been close to that victim, that might have been a person they could have turned to, has kind of been removed from their lives. So that's one thing I think really important. And then the other control, the kind of where are you, what are you doing, stuff that in the beginning of a relationship can maybe look flattering and like love. You know, I love you so much, I just want to know where you are all the time. But it's very controlling very quickly.
Flare-ups of irrational jealousy?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And do you want to add to that, Linda?
Oh, absolutely. The jealousy, the possessiveness, and Julia's right. You know, it might seem warm and fuzzy, but when you become fearful and you're being timed and you can't go out with family members or friends, and you know they're constantly checking your phone and wanting your passwords, and you become sort of so fearful of upsetting the perpetrator, that's when you know. That's when you know that something is not right, this is not safe, and this is not healthy. This is not the way a safe and healthy relationship should look like, and really taking a step back and looking at that.
Amy Zuniga, you told us the story of what happened at your house and how your husband, you said, locked you in a closet for several days. Eventually, you were able to get out. There was a lot of physical violence, but were there early signs?
Looking back, yes. But when you're in that situation, for me, it was the shame, the guilt, and the finances. I didn't know if I could do it on my own. How was I going to support my children? He made more money. He paid the bills. So a lot, they were signs, but you sort of stuck in that situation because as you're going through it, you feel all alone. You at the time, you feel like no one else is going through it but you. And you just want to try to have as normal and happy life, if you can have a happy moment at the time. And for me, a lot of it was, where do I go? Who do I turn to? Who do I talk to? Family is a big part of it. I didn't visit my family as often because of the shame that I had. They would have seen the bruises, the marks. So I just felt trapped. I didn't know where to go from there.
She mentioned the finances, and there's talk of financial abuse is part of the process for domestic abuse. And Linda Canizales at the Family Violence Prevention Services, what do they mean by financial abuse in these circumstances?
Yes, I mean, just the inability to support yourself independently, and many times the abuser will keep the victim from having a job, maintaining a job. You know, they lose their job because of stalking and threats and calls and perhaps calling the boss and getting them fired, not allowing them to have access to the bank account or have any credit cards, or very parent, very child relationship.
So allowing no financial freedom.
Exactly, right.
As a means of control.
Absolutely, yes.
And is that one of the early warning signs when you're going to have a joint bank account, but only he gets to have control of it? Is that
right? Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Or allowing them to go to school and further their education so they can get a better job. Absolutely.
All right. We got an email from one of our listeners. It says, the main thing that kept me in my marriage to a man who was violent and unstable, but not physical, was that I was afraid he would have shared custody of our preschool age daughter. I didn't want her to have to deal with his temper alone and without me. If I stayed at home, at least I would always be there in order to protect her. And Juliet Rainey Rodriguez, you're over at Bexar County Domestic Violence Task Force. You're nodding your head. You've heard this before.
Yes. Well, I'm a family violence attorney with Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, and I represent only victims of sexual assault and family violence and family law cases. And I that is a primary concern, and that's very valid and very upsetting. It's very hard that a victim would have to be put in that between those two choices of leaving and not knowing if her child might be safe certain times without her, and staying and everybody being in an unsafe situation. But as I was mentioning earlier about victims often doing safety planning with their children, that is a very common reason they don't leave. Because the reality is most perpetrators of family violence will get some type of access to their children and some type of unsupervised access. They will get either custody, or they will get visitation and every other weekend, or they might get every other week, just depending, because in a lot of these cases, there is not a lot of evidence. And so when you go before a judge and, you know, it's my client, the victim's word versus the perpetrator, and often family members didn't know about it and the police weren't called. And so the reality is that perpetrators of family violence do get custody and visitation of their children, and victims know that, and they are concerned about their small children. And so I think that's a valid concern and something that I work really hard in my cases to educate judges about, and to work to get safe outcomes for victims and children.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Number is 210-614-8980. If you have a story and you're thinking about calling and you're a little shy, I want to encourage you to give us a call and tell us your story like Kevin did. And Kevin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I was actually going back to what y'all were kind of talking before about, like, getting to the shelter. And the thing that kind of, you know, triggered me to call in was you guys kept saying you can stay away from he at the shelter. When you get to the shelter, you can stay away from him, as if y'all were perpetrating, as the males are always perpetrators. It's not the case out there. I mean, I personally have been the victim of a female that was very, very, it started off just like you guys said, where are you doing, where you're at, what have you been, what's going on? And it's cute at first, but then it becomes controlling, and it's possessive, and it turned violent. And it goes both directions. It's not just,
for sure, Kevin.
He's perpetrating her, or she's perpetrating him, or he on he, or she on
okay.
She.
Okay. Kevin, thank you for calling in. And so let's run with that point. Julia Rainey Rodriguez, I mean, men can also be the victims.
Absolutely. It's valid. Both men and women can be victims of family violence. But the reality in Texas and in this country is most people who are killed in family violence incidents are women. In Texas in 2016, all were women. And the reality still is that most perpetrators of family violence are men. So while there are male victims, most of their perpetrators are male. There are female victims, that is true, but the reason I think most of us on this panel are using the he and she is not to exclude male victims. There certainly are, but statistically, the overwhelming number, and particularly when you get into the lethality areas where it becomes a life or death situation, most victims are women.
And correct. Not all these relationships are opposite sex relationships. We know that they span. If you have a relationship in any sort of circumstances, there is the potential for domestic family violence, LGBTQ included. And so can I ask you about that, Linda Canizales at the Family Violence Prevention Services? What kind of services are available for anyone?
Absolutely. So we assist all victims of abuse, and we are dedicated to helping breaking the cycle and helping victims move, towards self-sufficiency with all the services like counseling and case management, legal services. And again, on a daily basis, we house between 150 to 160 women and children every day. And again, it's not just the residential program that we have. We operate non-residential services as well. And that is also for, again, anybody, and that is women, children, the elderly, males, and that's counseling, children's services, legal services. So I encourage everyone and anyone who is a victim of abuse to reach out. It has no face. It doesn't matter how attractive you are, your level of education, what kind of job you have. It can happen to anyone. It has no zip code.
The number to call in, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, talking about family violence, lethal family violence here in Texas. The Source continues when we come back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Break the silence. There is a lot of silence surrounding domestic violence across the country, across Texas, and here in Bexar County. Bexar County has the highest rate of domestic violence calls of anywhere in the state of Texas. Why is that? What services are available? How can we help women and men break out of relationships that have turned to violence? Give us a call. This includes you. If you have something to share, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Officer Betty Cardona with the San Antonio Police Department, there is a victims compensation fund that's available. Isn't that right? What is that?
It's a victims compensation program that is through the state, and there's services available, financial services available for victims. As the panel has mentioned, one of the circumstances that victims don't leave is because of financial. And this will help them once they apply. It could help them with several services, moving fees, rent fees, deposits on the rent, medical bills that may be occurred because of the incident, as long as they cooperate with the police and cooperate with the offense and there's a criminal offense that's occurred, they are eligible for this. And they can go to any substation and speak to a crisis response team, and they will assist them with a crime victim compensation application.
Amy Zunica, we've been hearing your story through the hour. What happened with the legal system? What happened to your husband? Was he arrested? Did he get charged? What happened?
Well, I got a protective order and a restraining order against him. Did he follow it? No. He would still stalk me over the phone. He knew exactly where I was at. Seemed like every minute of the day, what I was doing, when I would get home. We finally went to court, and the judge ordered him to stay so many distance away from me, from the school, because he knew I put a protective order against him with my son, because he would threaten to pick him up after school and take him from me. So that was my biggest concern, of course, with my children. At the end of the whole ordeal, eventually, he did stay away. He moved, but after a year or so of torment, of the constant calling the boys, saying, "Where's your mom? I know where she's at," calling me names, getting them to be angry at the whole situation. So I knew then that we all needed help. We all needed counseling, because the last thing I wanted was for my own sons to be abusive to their wives or girlfriends or what have you. I didn't want what happened to me to be a cycle because of the way the father was.
I hear about nightmares that a lot of women, after they've gotten out of the relationship and they've found some freedom, they still have the nightmares.
Oh, every day. Because you never know if they're lurking around the corner. Do they know where are you? Their friends. If you went somewhere, their friends will call him and say, oh, she's over here, I see her, or she's doing this, or what have you. So it never, never leaves you because you're in constant fear. Although you know you're going to be okay, it's the thought of them still having that power to come and take you.
At any time. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones with Linda. Linda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Maybe Lydia, right?
Lydia, I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. And this is so timely because the other day I was on VIA, and there was a young lady who was sitting across from where I was sitting. There was a man sitting with her. He had his arm around her shoulders, and I mean, just very dominating. And she turned to me and smiled, and she had the biggest black eye I've ever seen. She had a few bruises on her arms, but she seemed like somebody who I was really afraid to say, are you okay? So my question is, how does one handle an incident like this? Is there something I could have done, said to her to help her?
Lydia, thank you for the call. And Julia Rainey Rodriguez.
I think that's a really important question and a great question, because I think one of the problems that we have as a community is that we're not holding perpetrators accountable, and we're saying that that's a private problem. The answer kind of varies. I think if you see something in the moment, like you see an incident happening, definitely call law enforcement. That's the best thing to do, and that will help a victim.
That's if you're seeing beatdown personally.
Absolutely.
But if you see a victim walking around with the wounds, what can you do?
Well, there is the National Domestic Violence Hotline, and they have little cards, and they have a phone number, and their phone number is 1-800-799-SAFE. And I've had that memorized for like 20 years, or I guess whenever they started, not 20 years. 1-800-799-SAFE, and I have scratched that down and handed it to people before. The trick to that is, though, you have to be careful that it's safe for them to be handed that. I mean, if the perpetrator is really just watching them, it may not be safe to hand that to her. So I think it really depends on the situation. I'm not sure that there's always something you can do in that moment.
Okay, I'm going to take a caller, and this is Lily. And Lily, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, hi. Thank you for having me.
Go right ahead.
I just wanted to share my story with the audience. I am an adult who grew up in a very abusive household. My father had been a boxer, and he had a very terrible temper, and he would abuse us, and he would abuse my mother, not frequently, but when he did, it was very awful for everybody. And when I turned 12 years old, I called the police to report him because I thought he was going to kill my mother. I really did. I felt, that she was going to die. So I called the police. And so my father stopped physically abusing all of us, but he went to emotional abuse. So I just wanted to say that although oftentimes the parents feel like somehow they're protecting their children by staying in an abusive relationship, but I'm in my 50s and I still carry the scars of the first 18 years of my life.
Lily, thank you for calling in. I do appreciate it, and I think your call is probably helping other people get closer to healing. One of the lies that's told in an abusive relationship is that this is normal, and this is what it's like to be in a relationship. Did you hear that, Amy Zuniga, that this is just the way it is?
Oh, all the time. Often he would say, it was my fault. No one's going to believe you. Where are you going to go? You don't have money. How are you going to support the kids? How are you going to feed them? So it's one lie after another. But in a situation like that, you believe it. You believe every single word that comes out of their mouth. Your self-esteem is shot down. You have no confidence in yourself because they're constantly calling you. They're constantly stalking you. And if you don't answer the phone, they're calling you at work 10 or 20 times a day. And the embarrassment, because what do you tell your coworkers? Well, how do you tell them that, oh, my husband's calling because he can't get a hold of me? Or I'm going to go home and I'm going to get beat. It's a shame that you carry along with you.
So did you have wounds on you? What did you tell people those were caused by?
I always covered them up. I wore a lot of turtlenecks. I suffered a lot from headaches, even till this day. As long as it's been, my memory seems to have played a big part of it because I was really abused. He would hit me with a closed fist in my head. Choked me, so you know, it never leaves you. Even now, I go to the doctor and I asked him plain blank, could have the years of abuse have an effect on my memory now? And he plain out and said, absolutely.
Yeah, multiple concussions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Linda Canizales, Family Violence Prevention Services. This is not normal. Relationships are not supposed to be this way. How do we get people to understand that?
You know, just with the education and awareness, and again, October being Domestic Violence Awareness Month, we need to help people understand that, you know, abuse is never okay.
In the dating relationship, a married relationship, even into the senior years.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is never okay. And letting them know that they're not alone. And again, 1 in 3 will be victimized by an intimate partner. So we want them to feel empowered by other people telling their story and giving us the opportunity to help them and get them, you know, connected to the resources so they can live free from abuse and they can move on and rebuild their lives.
And Julia Rainey Rodriguez, Bexar County Domestic Violence Task Force, there is help in the courtroom. There's legal help for women who need this help.
Yes, there are free legal services available to family violence victims and their children. There are a few in Bexar County. Linda's mentioned that the Battered Women and Children's Shelter has attorneys on staff. Also, Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid provides free legal services for victims of family violence, from protective orders to divorces to custody cases. The Family Justice Center, run by the district attorney, also provides free legal assistance with protective orders. And if somebody is outside of Bexar County, Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid covers those counties as well. And I know that the Battered Women and Children's Shelter covers some of those counties. But 1-800-799-SAFE is the National Domestic Violence Hotline. They can call. They can get the nearest shelter, the nearest legal resources, some safety planning, and any kind of information they need on family violence.
We'll have links and numbers on our website, tpr.org. Many thanks to all of our guests and callers. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source. Thanks for tuning us in.